Welcome to The Greg Bennett Show. I'm your host, Greg Bennett. And this was an incredibly inspiring conversation with a young man wise beyond his years with Matt Hauser. Matt is an Australian athlete that's just been on the rise for this last 7-8 years. Just an incredible conversation. We go through his journey. He talks about the experiences of the Tokyo Olympics and all the lessons that he was able to learn from that as he now prepares for the Paris Olympic Games. He's already qualified for Australia. We discuss Paris, the course, what it's going to take to be successful there. And you can tell by this conversation just how intent he is on his career and getting the most out of himself. We spend a lot of time talking about the importance of knowing that, you know, today could be your last pretty much and making the most of it. And I love that intentional behavior that he has and the way that he's approaching life and his sport. He's so grateful for his team and his family and his coaches and everybody else. And it's just really a great conversation. And it's one that I think, you know, if you're listening to this, you really should be sharing with family, friends. If you've got kids, I think they'll get a lot out of this one as well. A lot of great takeaways. So please share this one out. I think you're going to do a lot of people a big favor to listen to this episode with Matt. I'm sure, like me, after listening to this one, you'll be rooting for him at the Paris Olympic Games. Just a really delightful young man. Also, remember, if you're interested in connecting with me, you can do that usually over Instagram. Direct message is pretty good, or on LinkedIn or anywhere else. I still have openings for Fireside Fridays, I'm calling them, where I'm happy to chat with you for 30 minutes on a Friday. So let me know if you're interested in that and we can set some time up. I've had some wonderful conversations on those Fireside Friday chats. So, you know, let's keep that going. And I hope you enjoy this one as much as I did. And remember, success comes to those who endure just one moment longer. All right, today we're diving into the world of a remarkable athlete who's taken the triathlon world by storm. And honestly, I'm a huge fan. From clinching world titles as a junior to making waves around the globe at the Olympics, Commonwealth Games, the World Triathlon Series, and the Super Tri Series, his journey is just nothing short of inspirational. He's battled through the highs and lows with the heart of a champion. Just watch the Super League Triathlon Series of 2022, just showing absolute resilience, dedication, and sheer passion for the sport. It was unbelievable. If you haven't watched that, please go watch it. An Australian powerhouse known for his fierce competitiveness, dominating swim, and incredible work ethic. He's not just a rising star, he's a force to be reckoned with, setting the pace for future generations. So, without further ado, welcome to the Greg Bennett Show, Matt Hauser. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, Greg. Thanks for the great intro, mate. Yeah, pleasure to be here. I woke up early for you, mate, here on sunny Gold Coast. So,
mate, I gotta say, when I saw, you know, for people listening, I send the guests, you know, a little calendar window, and normally for Australians or New Zealanders, I have to find some other times, and then I see Matt has chosen 6 a.m. Gold Coast time to do this recording on a Friday morning for him. Mate, how in the world are you up at this hour doing a recording? Shouldn't you be at the squad swimming or doing something else? What's going on?
Yeah, exactly right. I should have done a 10K run by now. You're right. on the Gold Coast, you feel very lazy if you're up, you know, past 7 o'clock. So, yeah. It is such an awesome lifestyle here. Like, yeah, everyone's up at the break of dawn and you see hordes of people like running and getting fit along the Esplanade there. So, it's pretty cool, yeah.
You're in one of the most beautiful spots. You were saying you're in the Currumbin on the Gold Coast and you've just bought your first apartment, which is kudos to you, buddy.
Thank you.
Some great racing, but it's also, honestly, of the Gold Coast, you know, that whole region, I really think down around that Currumbin area is just some of the most beautiful, beautiful parts of the world.
It is beautiful, yeah. I was always based around like the Burley, Miami area, which is also beautiful, but yeah, Currumbin's a little bit quieter and a little bit not as well known. So it's super nice here. And yeah, just another nice little life goal to tick off outside of triathlon, which has been good.
Yeah, well, look, mate, what do you got on today then? It's a Friday. You know, you're in the thick of things. What are we? February 16th, we're recording this, I think. You know, is this a recovery day or have you got still some training to do?
yeah, still some training to do after this. I'll head off to Currumbin Creek, actually, just down the hill from me. And then we'll do a bit of a key ocean swim. And then, yeah, after that, I'll do about an hour jog, and then I'll get into some Pilates, which has been a new incorporation to my program. So been having fun with it. It's certainly keeping me on my toes. The lack of balance is quite stupid, really. So, but yeah, it's finding faults in my overall, you know, body strength and improving those little 1%ers. And I think that's something I'm really buying into this year, obviously being a pretty big year, you know?
Yeah, well, let me touch on that. Firstly, huge congrats. Second Olympic Games that you've qualified for. You're already on the Australian team and going to Paris. Tell me, you qualified for that at Ponte Verde, right? At the grand final for the World Series?
Yeah, Ponte Verde, yeah.
How much of a relief was that? Is that an awesome just... Now I can just focus on getting ready for Paris?
It's so much relief, yeah. I think, when I crossed the finish line, it was a battle to the end in that race, especially the run. Obviously 4 to 6 weeks prior in Paris, the test event, I unfortunately got COVID like the day before the race. So, I had to sit that one out, unfortunately. It was a tough lead up, and we knew we had to squeeze like everything out of the days leading into it. I ended up getting 8th, which was right on the cusp of the qualification requirements. So,
how close was 9th? It was pretty close, right?
It was pretty close.
You guys were all right there.
I had a Hayden Wild chasing me as well, which was enough.
Yes, he finished in 10th, I think, right?
Yeah, it was closing down on me.
Did they all your mates know that you had to get a top 8? Like, was there kind of maybe a little handshake? Like, oh, mate, yeah, you got it.
A lot of the Aussies, like watching on the sidelines, knew that as well. But actually, there was an athlete in front of me, Miguel Hidalgo, who's been flying at the moment. He received a penalty, or he was like disqualified or something for not taking a penalty.
That's right. Yes.
It was a disqualification. So everyone was like, "You're in 7th. You're good. You're in 7th." And then like, luckily, like they didn't let me rest on my laurels like too long, because obviously he got reinstated into the race after an appeal. So imagine if they were like, "You're an 8th, you're all good," and then he gets reinstated and I'm come 9th. Surely I'd have to get on my hands and knees for the selectors to let that one through to the keeper.
Oh, wow. I actually didn't know that. I knew something happened around him being DQ'd, and I didn't know that he was reinstated and all of that. Mate. Well, congrats again.
Thank you.
To be able to just take a breather, refocus. You know, I've never been a huge fan of having qualifications in the same year for everybody else kind of thing. I've always, I don't know, we can probably do a whole podcast on this, but basically I'm a fan of using the world rankings that you have, you know, and then picking your top three. And you basically, you know, if we got LA Olympics coming up next, you basically say, look, from the world rankings, a couple of years out, we're starting, go. And the top three we're taking, rather than having to jump through more hoops. I don't know. I'd want my athletes to feel like they can fly free a bit like you can. You can map out your year now. You can really decide what races are going to suit you best to prepare for Paris. You know, because you and your coach know you best, and you're able to actually prepare how you want to. And I think that's what do the other Australians have to do right now that haven't qualified yet?
Yeah, so basically the big one is Yokohama World Series, and that's another top 8. And then if that isn't achieved, I think it's then down to Cagliari, which is the last kind of race before the cutoff period. So, a few big races left. And obviously, like, in between that, that's, like, all discretionary selection stuff that gets looked at, which is, you know, as we know, is a big talking point.
Been there, done that. I was taken out of the 2000 Olympic team because of that. And it's like,
it's tough.
I mean, you were 2 years old when that all happened, but that was a dramatic part of my life.
and many others as well, you know. But it's the ruthless nature of the sport, I guess. And, I guess that's why they set the auto qualification standards. But, yeah, it's tough. It's tough for sure.
And of the Aussie men and women, what have they got, 2 or 3 spots? How are they doing in terms of world rankings, do you know?
We're looking at 2 spots at the moment for men and women. I think it'll stay that way. Hopefully we get to qualify a relay, which I think we're just on the cusp of. But that'll be we'll get it done. We'll get there.
Good man.
We'll get across the line.
Yeah. I'm asking you some big questions at 6 a.m. in the morning, mate, but I am curious. You know, I keep my finger on the pulse, but sometimes there's still a little bit that I'm missing out on. But what I want to do is, what I love to do on this show is kind of rewind the clock. Now, you're still a young man, so we're not going to have to rewind terribly far. I just had Joe Friel on the show, and Joe is 83, so we got to really rewind the clock with him. But with you, mate, you got to just rewind the clock a little bit. Just tell me how you sort of found your passion for the world of triathlon and endurance events. You know, what was that whole process like?
Yeah, so basically as a young kid growing up in Hervey Bay, a bit of a smaller town and city. So not much access to a lot of the facilities and stuff that the metropolitan areas had. So started out playing AFL cricket, basically getting my hands on anything I can touch for in the sport world, and started out with athletics and cross country as well in school, and found I had a bit of a talent for that and running. So that was really, really fun, and I really enjoyed AFL. Dad, Aussie rules for those who don't know. Dad grew up in South Australia, so that's where the Aussie rules genes came from. And he moved up with his family in his teenage years. So loved that and gained selection in the Brisbane Lions Academy. So did a few sessions with them and was really loving it. But a couple of concussions came my way pretty early on. So I had to kind of give it up, and maybe my skill base was lacking a little bit. So I think they only liked me for my 2K run time and a few other agility and athletic things. So it turns out I picked the right sport after all. So
how tall are you? Because you look tall in the triathlon world, but in AFL, are you 6 foot, 6 foot one? What are you?
6'1", 6'1".
6'1". Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you look tall as a triathlete, but for AFL...
AFL would be mid-size, pretty average, yeah. Be the back of packs for a lot of things. So
I
really loved the team aspect of that sport, and it came a time obviously where I had to kind of choose, and I think I did my first aquathlon at the age of 12, and it was a part of like a school sport event for the state titles, and basically. It started out with the team just needing me to fill a relay spot, and they knew I was a decent runner. So, I came along and kind of did a bit of squad swimming, and then after that found a bike that I borrowed the next year to do a triathlon. And, I don't know, I did all right. I was hooked. I finished strong in the run, and that kind of made me get that hunger to improve in the other two legs as well. And I wasn't a very good swimmer when I started out. I was
no way. Hang on. I wasn't a very good swimmer. This guy is rocking the front of every race he does around the world, mate. I wasn't a very good swimmer. What? No, and you were 12, 13, 14. So you started swimming late, for a swimmer. Okay, indeed. Go on. I'm sorry.
You're right.
I'm taking it back on that one.
Mate, it's all part of the journey.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what happened?
I don't know. Yeah, obviously, I just didn't grow up swimming much. I was much more of a runner. And that was definitely a fight to get decent at that. And a lot of like double swim days and I think with swimming, it's one of those, like with riding and running, you can develop a lot throughout like your 20s. But I think with swimming, it's even like proven, there's backed up data to say that like you do most of your development in the water before the age of 19. So it's one of those things where, I just needed to knuckle down and get good at from an early age, early-ish age. And got that to a point where I'm obviously happy with now. But, that's where I started out. And I remember crossing the finish line at my first national titles in Busselton, WA. Mm-hmm. And, won by about a minute. And, kind of, well, I got like fourth or fifth at state titles. So I was like coming into the race going, oh yeah, I should do all right. Like Queensland are pretty healthy in terms of competition, but yeah, wasn't quite expecting that. And I think that kind of showed me that if I really committed to this sport, I'd have a future. So
nice. And then you were about 14, 15 when you were racing that. How old were you when you?
Yeah, 13, 14, I'd say. Yeah, 13, yeah. Probably 14. I'd say that year was in Busselton. So
you got a national title in triathlon at 14. And was that the kind of moment you're like, huh, I actually do have some ability here. This is the right move. This is the right sport I should be doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like I obviously didn't have too much knowledge of the sport. Like I wasn't even like watching, you know, the likes of probably Chris McCormack racing at that stage or, you know, others or Courtney Atkinson. So I didn't have too much knowledge of the sport. I just thought it was like a good way to get another notch in the belt for school sport titles. Like it was all about just collecting, like, I don't know, I guess like collecting accolades at that stage because something to bring back to school, and it was pretty cool for the other kids to experience as well. So, but yeah, that was kind of the time where I kind of, yeah, thought I had some talent in the sport and, kind of committed from there on in. And yeah, my coach at the time, Brian Harrington in Hervey Bay, was kind of pretty revved up at that result as well. So I think, him and I knew that if we stuck at this, we'd be pretty good. So, I think it's definitely a credit to the triathlon community in, up in Hervey Bay. For such a small community, it's a thriving sport. And they give back, to the juniors and the young kids around the area so much. And, yeah, as I mentioned, Brian Harrington, my old coach, he coached for free. He spent a lot of time away from his family and he was working a full-time job as a teacher and was able to come down at 5:15 in the morning and take us through a bike session and then back it up in the afternoon for a run. So, credit to him. He's like definitely a big influence in my career.
Big shout out, Brian. It's awesome. And, you know, there are so many people in the sport that I just did an episode actually with a guy by the name of Colin Cook. And Colin, you know, he's an age group triathlete, but he's got the clubs and the teams and the coaching, and he's just giving to the sport. And really the sport would be nothing without those people. And I have similar stories for me growing up in Balmoral Triathlon Club, you know, back a long time before you were born, but late 80s, early 90s. And it was really just people, you know, even just helping you with your travel and letting you sleep on the sofa at races or whatever it was. And it's like, you can't do it on your own. It does take a team, a village to be able to flourish, you know. So that's really cool, mate. And then when did you, you know, you went on to win World Junior Champs in 2017, is that right? Yeah. And did you go into that World Junior Champs going, okay, I'm pretty fit and strong, I've been winning in Australia. Were you confident there, or what was that experience like?
I was definitely confident. I knew I was one of the top juniors going to that race, and obviously being top age group around 19, it was my year to do it, if any year. Previously I went to Chicago in 2015, and that was a pretty wild experience. My first like decent trip overseas, and training out of Notre Dame as well, the college there, and I think it was South Bend as well, near Chicago that we're at. Yep. So bit of a different spot. Not much going on there, but you know, still a decent place to train and prepare, and got fifth in a what was a duathlon. So that's right. Under 19 to being 17, getting fifth. Leading into that following year in Cozumel 2016, I was probably coming in a little bit too, I don't know, I don't want to say complacent, but I think I was just expecting it all to come at me, and I probably didn't respect it as what I thought. I came off the back of an Asian tour and won, you know, all my races there, and was coming in pretty confident, and yeah, lo and behold, I got 45th, which was, I think, a massive wake up.
I love our sport. sport, anybody that comes in being an arrogant son of a whatever, it's amazing the humility that you this sport will throw at
you. It's humbling. It's so humbling. And I think I learned so much from that experience. And I distinctly remember being like in the ice bath after the race, just in my little Airbnb or whatever we were staying at. And our performance director at the time, Bernard Savage, came screaming and knocking at my door because we're meeting for the mixed team relay the next day. And I was just like not having anything. I didn't want to be a part of anything. Like I was just like so down and out, thinking it was like the biggest thing in the world at the time because, you know, as you do as a young kid.
Yeah, it was.
And he's like, Matt, we need you for the bloody relay. Come on, mate. Get your head out of your hands. Let's kick on here. And I think that was what really drove me to that 2017 success. Was that kind of failure in 2016 and knowing that, you know, not everything's going to come to you. It's not just going to, you know, come at the drop of a hat. You really need to work at this sport, and you can't rely on sole talent, which I'm reminded by Tyler Misselchuk is my only attribute, just talent.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know what he says. He keeps harping on about that I'm all talent, no hard work. So I guess. Yeah. 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 And he's the opposite, apparently. I don't know how a guy that wins WTCS medals can't be talented, but.
No, don't you love that? Everybody knows that. Simon Whitfield hates it when I say the same thing to him. Oh, mate, you are so talented.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you worked hard a little bit. You like to think that you're the hardest worker in the room, always.
It's right? such a backhanded compliment saying you're just talented. Like, it's like, thanks, but. You know, I actually do kind of work.
Talent's a curse, mate. Talent is a curse. The amount of times you look and once you get further on in your career, there's always going to be somebody talking about, oh, there's another junior kid. He's so amazing. He's so talented. All right, let's see how he goes in the next 10 years when he starts fronting up to the big boys that are desperate to win and are willing to do it at any expense that they can. And it's like, you now go up against talent plus hard work. It's like, ooh. That's an Alistair Brownlee, you know, or a Gomez or Jan Fried. Actually, Jan Fredino didn't have much talent, according to his coach, Dan Lorang. It's funny, isn't it? So, 2017, mate, you win in Rotterdam, a massive performance. It was, I was just looking at the results from earlier, and you've got Vasco Balaka right behind you. But you was a really dominating performance, mate. You're running a 15:23 off the bike. Outstanding performance all around. Was that the kind of race that you were like, wow, I just nailed that from start to finish? Did it feel really good, that one?
Yeah, it felt really good. It's funny you mentioned the 15:20 something or whatever it was. Like, I look back on the result in Hamburg last year for the juniors and I think they're running like 14:30, 14:40. So I'm like, ooh.
The shoes are getting faster, mate. The shoes are getting faster.
Yeah, we'll blame it on the shoes. Yeah, exactly right. Shoes, bikes, goggles,
Short course, no U-turns, whatever.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm benefiting off that, you know, my career still, which is great. But, you know, you can kind of see the disparity between the results there. But, we'll take it as the equipment for sure.
It's still good. It's still a really great performance, mate. And was it at that point you kind of go, okay, this will be my career? Like, was there a moment where you were like, okay, I'm going to be a professional triathlete, or is it just kind of just doing races and collecting a little prize money along the way?
I think it was a bit about, just like onto the next one, like keep improving. 2017 was a big year for me because I was introduced to the elite level of racing. I raced Super League Triathlon, the inaugural race in Hamilton Island, and that was thanks to Macca DMing me on Facebook. And it's funny, my coach and me, Dan Atkins, we were just like saying after I think I won Oceania Junior Champs that year. In Perth, and we were just saying we saw it in the news that there might be this race, you know, 100K on the line, best athletes in the world in Hamilton Island, and we were kind of like looking at each other going, how sick would it be to race like those guys and to race that? And then lo and behold, like I think it was like the next day or like a couple hours later, like I just get this DM from Macca, and he's asking to, you know, put my junior talent on display in Hamilton Island. And I was like, bloody oath, let's go.
Yeah.
So I guess that was like being thrown into the deep end a little bit, and I got to race those guys and learn what the level is and learn where I needed to be. And I think after that experience, like everything, you know, training day to day, it was all, you know, focused on not just racing my peers or the people at around my age or around my level. It was racing, training to race those guys at the top level. So, yeah.
And then look, mate, you keep progressing. You make the Olympic team for Tokyo. Take me through that experience. I know Tokyo was an unusual Olympics, but still to qualify, you were still a young man, you know, 21, 22 when you qualified. Was that a surprise? Was that a goal? Was that, you know, that whole experience? Take me through that.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely definitely a goal. I remember watching Rio with my coach, and we were like saying, you know, Tokyo's my next one. Like that's the next one up for me. And yeah, it was a nice surprise. I think I knew I was in the mix. And I did quite well in the domestic season leading up to that selection. I beat, you know, Jake Birtwistle, who was, you know, one of the favorites at the time for the Tokyo Olympics. So yeah, I was beating some strong guys, albeit in Australia. Obviously, we didn't get to leave. And
you guys didn't get to race at all. That COVID lockdown you guys had, it was a tough Olympics for the Australian team as a whole because you didn't actually get to do any racing.
Definitely.
You know, so the actual Olympic itself, you know, was it enjoyable? What was that actual, you know, because I've had Ashley Gentle on and a few other people have spoken about it and just said actually it wasn't, they didn't have a good experience. I think there was large expectations without having the preparation that you need, you know, to make things happen. Plus you're missing family, friends, crowds, everything else. But tell me, the Olympics in Tokyo, what was it like for you?
I think if I was to describe in one word, and this is, you know, a little bit sad, being my first Olympics, it was anticlimactic. Mm. It was a lot of preparation, probably more so like administrative, like preparation, a lot of like hoops to jump through, a lot of like tests, a lot of, you know, quarantining, a lot of, you know, planning out how it's going to look, testing every day, how we're going to, you know, be flown in 2 days before the race and flown straight out within 24 hours. And it was quite a shell of an experience, for me, to be honest. And fact that obviously I didn't, you know, race to probably what my capabilities were, was also a little bit of a downside, obviously. And, yeah, I walked away from the individual coming 24th and I was like, look, that was a bloody tough race. Like that was probably all I could have given on that day. I probably focused a little bit too much on the one percenters and not about just building those big rocks and that big base. I think, you know, the months leading into it, I think we focused so much on selection and we go back to like that late selection, late discretionary selection. And, you know, I was racing, you know, junior, like young guys at Runaway Bay thinking that like, my result here is going to dictate whether I can get selected or not. It's like it was quite an unhealthy way of going about it, and I think that was a bit of miscommunication around selection as well. So much of my preparation was given to trying to be actually selected, and then when it came down to building up to the games, I think we missed a little bit there, which is unfortunate, but obviously something to learn on, and you know, something to drive me towards Paris. But after the individual, I was like disappointed, but I was like, all right, we still got one more opportunity to do well and gain a medal. And I just remember like getting goosebumps when, you know, I'm seeing all the returning swimmers with their halls of medals clinking around their necks, coming back to the Australian Tower, just going, you know, I want that. Like, I want that to give joy and to give hope and to spread a message of, just, yeah, overall pride for Australia. Like, I want that for us as a team, as a triathlon team. And I remember saying to Jake, like, let's get that feeling. Like, let's feel that by the end of these games. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, history tells the tale itself, I think. Yeah, we're obviously quite exposed in that relay race, but, yeah, it's tough.
It wasn't to be, mate. It wasn't to be, but, you know, the beauty of it is for you is you had that experience at 22 years of age. You've lent into your talent and you've amplified your work ethic, you know, and that'll keep building and building. You know, it's like for me and Macra and I go back forever and we roomed at nearly every World Cup race and everything for years. And we always talked about the golden 30s. You know, you're still in your mid-20s. You still got all the raw power, the raw speed, which you'll keep into your 30s. But as you go through this sport, you're strengthening your endurance and even your mental strategies just get better and better and better. But when you've had big losses like that early on, that's really where all the great learning comes from, right? And I think going forward, you and your coach Ben, it's like, yeah, we've been through the process and now we can go and have some fun in Paris, you know, and race freely. You know, it's like if there was one bit of advice I could give you, it's like just to race free, you know, remove that gorilla record expectation on your back and go play. And everybody I've had on this show been amazing, from Sebastian Kinley and everybody onwards. They're like, yeah, now how'd you win that Ironman race? Or how'd you do that? It's like, actually, yeah, I'd been injured. I'd been really sick. And so I went in with no pressure. The amount of times I've had that conversation on this show, it's been unbelievable. And anyway. I shouldn't be preaching, but
no, definitely. I think that freeing is something that's driving me, you know, towards, yeah, Paris and my future goals, because it was probably around that time in Tokyo where, you know, the very next year I was like, well, this sport isn't going to stick around forever. Like, I'm not going to be in this sport forever. And I think that was the first time I properly realized that. Like, I really have to grab the opportunities that I have, you know, by the balls. And the finite nature of the sport is something that really is like motivating and inspiring me at the moment. Like, you've got to take every opportunity that you get, and Paris is one of those opportunities, and that allows me to race freely, because I know I've got nothing to lose, and I'm committing 100% to the sport. So I think that's something that I was probably lacking before then.
Well done, mate. And well said, by the way. And look, fast forward now, 3.5 years since Tokyo. Take us through some of the incredible highs and a little bit of lows. There were a couple of lows there, like I mentioned in the introduction. 2022 was an incredible year for you in the Super League Triathlon, with a couple of big victories, one of them taken away from you in mistake, where you actually raced yourself into second, which was really a champion's performance. It really was a standout performance. I think when you look back in your life, I don't know if you want to look back in your life one day and go, that performance in London when you were taken out and had all reason to be spitting the dummy, which for international listeners, that means just losing your shit. but you didn't. You held it together. You were resilient. You stayed determined and you still finished second that day. You then went on to win two more races in the series and then had a crash in another. It was an incredible series. But look, tell me some of the highs of your career. What really stands out to you?
Yeah, I think that 2022 year really stands out because, you know, I was able to back up from the adversity of Tokyo and really transcend my training to a whole new level and just everything around training as well. You know, I was probably not fully into the sport. I think I was probably not fully committing to the lifestyle that is triathlon. So, I knew those things needed to change because of that finite nature of the sport. Like, I'm not going to be able to do it forever. So, I think I really kicked into a new gear psychologically and gave everything into building those bigger rocks and not worrying about the little 1%ers at the start and then building from there. So yeah, that 2022 season, getting my first podium in Hamburg behind Hayden was a massive stepping stone. I think also the fourth place in Yokohama, that was like, all right, this is my best finish yet. Like, this is the first race of the year. Like, I'm on a bit of a roll here. Let's go. Let's continue the momentum. And then that Super League season was, I just remember just not enjoying the racing the previous year, because it was, for me, it was like I'd lead out of the swim and then get dropped on the bike and be out the ass. Like, it was not an enjoyable experience. And I think for me, I was like, well, in order to enjoy this stuff, like, I really need to be up the front in influencing the race. And the only way to do that is to work hard and to get there. So, for me, that Super League season in 2022 was definitely a highlight. And it was probably one of those ones where I just like locked in for the whole 6 weeks of the of the tour, and I just put my head down and deleted all distractions and really committed fully, and was able to get some great results along the way. So
fantastic. And mate, you won your first World Series race last year, Montreal. That must have felt pretty special.
It was awesome. So cool. I knew it was kind of the opportunities were laid out in front of me. I think not having Hayden and Alex and a few others there, obviously it was probably not as strong a field. But that being said, I think I really took the race on and, led out of the swim, was up there influencing the bike in a tough technical wet day where a lot of guys slipped over and felt really strong on the run. Like, I just felt in control the whole race, and it was probably one of those like 99% perfect races. I think for myself, I think, you're never always going to be searching for that perfect race, but that was pretty damn close. So that was something I was really proud of, because I knew the onus was on me to try and, take the opportunity to get the win. So that was pretty special.
And there's something about winning, right? You can be consistent. You can be kind of around that. You actually won a fair bit. I actually believe, we're just starting to see the potential of you unleash more and more. I actually think this next sort of 5 to 10 years, we're going to be seeing a lot more of you. But, that feeling of raising the tape and making a win happen, like, it doesn't fall your way. You had to run away from a group of guys on the second lap of that run in Montreal. And unless you've been an athlete that's had to do that, it's both exhilarating and scary as hell, right? I mean, it's like, you don't know if you've got the energy to make this happen. You don't make a fool of yourself or whatever. Right? It's just like you're putting yourself out there. You're exposing yourself and you're going for that win. Take me through that little moment of decision process. Was it a decision to go, or did you just find you just ran away from them?
Yeah, a lot of the things in this short format of racing is just, adapting to the moment and having a moment of courage and that's a saying I took from my great mate Jamie Riddle from South Africa. He says, all it takes is a moment of courage. All it takes is 30 seconds of courage. And for me, that was on that second lap of the run where I kind of felt the pace easing a little bit, and I knew I didn't want it to come down to a sprint finish. And I really believed in my kick in my last final mile, and was able to produce that. But in the same fact, I think there really is an art to winning, and it's something that can't be taught. You need to get out there and teach yourself, I think. And that starts from an early age. Like, it goes back to Busselton when I first, won my first national title as a school kid. Like, there really is an art to winning, and it's something that can't be taught. So I remember Hayden a while back saying to me that once you get one on the board, it's pretty hard to stop the momentum. So hoping that's the case for years to come. But obviously we've all seen the progression that he and Alex have taken just from those first couple wins they had in that level, and then they've gone on to achieve some great things, and will still go on to achieve some epic things in the sport. So all it takes is one. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one to believe in yourself and to know that you got it in you to be the best on the day.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, the way you race from the front, you've got the swim, you've got the bike, and you've got a powerful run. You're going to be in these races. You are a player. And now we're talking, like you've mentioned a couple of times, these marginal gains, these doing the little things right, the Pilates, the TP massage rollers every single morning, and whatever it is, right, to just try and find these inches. You mentioned Hayden, you mentioned Alex, but these guys, you're in that group. the Frenchies. You know, there's quite a few. I feel like every time I turn on a World Series or Super Try, there's another five French guys.
But, it's crazy.
I don't know how they're going to pick their Olympic team. But, I mean, you know, you've mentioned your team, Brian and your first coach, and then Dan now. Who else is in your team that's in your corner as you prepare for these major championships?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, big part of it is family and my girlfriend Georgia, and my family, mum and dad and my sister have been such an amazing support for me. I get quite emotional thinking about it and how lucky I am to have people like that in my corner. I know that, like, yeah, obviously with sport and kids growing up, there can be so many things, not done right, I think, and I've seen that in the past with kids and kids that have so much talent and potential, but it's really the nurturing and support that your family and the people around you give you that really makes a champion. So, yeah, I think I've got them to thank. And, yeah, as I mentioned, my girlfriend Georgia, day-to-day support. She's been awesome and a great outlet for me. She's a runner, but she's not really in the world of triathlon, which I think is a really healthy thing for me. It'd be breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that's quite draining.
That's my wife and I, Laura and I, would get
not taking anything away from that.
You said for me. Yeah. No, it works for us, but I get it. I get what you're saying, though.
For sure. And then on top of that, I'll just continue. No, with
go
my
on, go on, go
support
on.
Team. Yeah. Yeah, like the Queensland Academy of Sport. I've got, you know, physiotherapists. I've got access to psychologists, like dietitians. Like, we've really got everything here on the Gold Coast. And Dan Atkins, my coach, as I mentioned, and obviously Oz Tri, allowing me to do my things and my personal sponsors as well. I think I'm feeling very loved and supported. And it's a strong base to then go and, make all that support and do all those, kind acts of support, justice, on the big stage. So that's my time to do my job.
Mate, the way you talk about your family and your support team is truly fantastic. And you remind me a little bit. Did you watch the Australian Open when Sinner did his victory speech this year?
It was epic.
And it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. And he just said, "Look, my parents allowed me the freedom to choose what I wanted to do, and they've just been nothing but supportive. I've never felt any pressure." And it was just like, wow, parents need to hear this. You know, Definitely. Now that I've got young kids of my own, it's like, yeah, you just need your kids. They've got to be free to go explore and find themselves and just support where you can. And, you know, what you were saying about your mum and dad and your girlfriend and that whole support structure is so monumental. It's so cool. You mentioned your sponsors. Have you got some, has that been good for you? Is the business side of this, you know, going in the right way for you?
It's been really good. I've been really fortunate to get a lot of opportunities with brands. ASICS Australia have been a massive support. They've been with me since I was like 16, 17, and continue to support me. Specialized, Oakley, Pillar Performance. Morton. Just to name a few. Hopefully I haven't missed a few.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
Look, we'll put in the podcast notes if I missed any.
No problem. I mean, and I can only think, we'll talk after the show, but I've got some ideas for you too. But I think some of these are, these will grow and continue to grow. And the more you hit the international scene, they'll keep changing and growing as well. You're a 6'1", good looking Aussie who's racing very well at the front of races. I think you're going to find the business side of this is going to be quite good for you. Stay healthy, keep performing, keep working hard, but I think this it'll be a great career for you. But I want to just sort of lean into Paris a little bit without putting pressure on you and anything else, but take me through the course. It's on the River Seine, is it?
Yep, indeed.
We raced there. Rewind the clock. We raced there. We had a World Cup back there in 96, I think, in 96. And the transition was under the Eiffel Tower and the water was not clean.
No.
I remember the dead fish and even if we saw a dead dog. I was with Macca and Jason Meadows, actually. If we went for a run, we're like, oh. But it was an epic race. It really was a cool event. It was the only time in my career I did a sprint triathlon. It was a shorter one. Otherwise, we always did Olympic distance. But tell me, the course, does it work in your favor? What are you thinking about? You know, the Seine moves pretty quick. It's a fast moving river, you know.
It definitely has a lot of variables to it. Obviously, I didn't get to race the test event, so I don't have quite the idea. But I was a bit able to be there for the familiarization and get a sense of the bike and the run course as well. So, it's actually quite shocking, like up close and personal, how quick that river runs. It is. It's pretty insane just watching the leaves like just float down at a rapid pace. So, you know. And on the flip side of that, how hard it is to come back into it. So, that'll definitely be a factor. There's definitely going to be guys like in the preparation, finding the heaviest streams of water and, you know, just bashing their way back into it, like against the current. So,
do you start with it behind the current behind you, or do you start with going into the current?
Start with it behind you. From the gun, that almost makes it quite hard to split up the race. I know I race quite hard from the start and into the first boy. So, you've got to be extra quick because everyone else is getting a little toe along as well. So,
they get less toe with the water going behind you. You want to get rid of them
exactly
on that way out. If you can have 1 meter gap going around the turn coming back, that 1 meter will turn to 5 to 10 really quick.
Definitely.
And
then it's also a flip of the coin because it's, you don't want to be like pushing into the current like too much either, because obviously people have a bit of a draft behind you. So that's probably also where it starts to compact a little bit as well on the way back to transition. Yeah. So it's all very interesting things, and hopefully it's clean enough that we can dip the toes in. For both the individual and the relay, but I have no doubt that Paris will get it done for sure. And then the bike course, insane, like Champs-Élysées, riding towards the Arc de Triomphe, near the Eiffel Tower, within like, you know, camera shot. It's probably the most iconic course that probably has ever been created, if not the most iconic course that I've raced on or will race on. And then having the transition on such a grand bridge as well, like in the middle of the city. I can't remember the name of the bridge, but it's got gold statues like on four corners, and it looks very epic. So I'm sure the photographers and the broadcast are going to have a field day, come July this year. But it's just going to be just as special, you know, being on course and racing it.
Yeah. And are you doing anything specific? It's obviously going to be fairly flat. There's no real hills, and if they're hills, they're minute. But the run, there might be a few little up rises and downs. Are you doing any kind of specific workouts to get you ready specifically for Paris, or is it all general fitness focused?
Not at the moment. It's mostly all fitness focused. I think we will do a few things around the swim. There's a few strong currents in the creeks and alleys here on the Gold Coast, so we can tap into that a little bit. The bike is obviously technical and fast, there's not a lot we can do with that. Obviously in the test event, it showed that maybe it was because a few guys were a bit nervous because selection was on the line, but it wasn't that kind of front group all the way that we would have liked to see as top pack swimmers. So I think that's just because of the raw pace of the course. Like, I think they average like 47, 48 K an hour around there. So, to be breaking up the race, you know, at that kind of pace, you've got to be taking some risks and moving pretty rapid. So, you know, ideally a group of 6 to 8 as per usual and just full gas, I think, is
that'd be awesome, mate.
That'd be the way to go.
You have me on the edge of my seat screaming at that point. I know. Have they banned aero bars on the World Series races?
They have. Yeah. I think a few guys are getting a little bit too scientific and technical with that stuff. So I think to the point of possibly endangering others. So I think, yeah, they kind of had to call it. Anytime the Norwegians get let into the lab, I think it's danger for everyone else. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's probably a good thing just to even the playing field and to make it as safe as possible, because then you kind of get like a guy's jumping on the bars like mid-pack and it's a little bit dangerous.
No.
And so, yeah, I think it's probably a good thing. So
are you still on the aerodynamics then? I mean, if you're going to be averaging 47 to 50 K an hour, averaging, you know, in corners, you're holding 55 K an hour for a lot of the race. Are you in, you know, the tunnels trying to figure out materials and trying to see how you can make yourself slice through the wind a little bit?
We'll have to wait and see, mate, won't we? Not showing all my cards. I'm not showing all my cards. Good.
I figured there'd be a few times you'd turn me down with some of these questions. No, and I'm glad you did, mate. But
yeah.
Look, I'm really excited for you for Paris. I'm excited for, you know, I don't know if you're looking to LA and then home Olympics in Brisbane. I think there's a, you know, if we think about this year with the PTO 100, you know, and there's $7 million going out, you know, it's extraordinary when you think there's $3 million for contracts, then $2 million for prize money throughout the races, and then, you know, $2 million in bonus money at the end of it. It's $7 million just in the PTO 100. You've got the World Series. You've got the Super League, or what are we calling it now? Super Tri.
Super Tri, yep, just came out yesterday, yeah. I think, or today. So
Yeah, Super Tri, we just changed the name. Iron Man are still, you know, they're there and thereabouts, and I think we need to make sure we keep supporting them, because I think there is quite a soul to Iron Man.
For sure.
As much as they're not perfect, I think, you know, Kona Iron Man and a lot of what they do is great. You've got the Challenge Series. Mate, it's a good time to be a professional athlete. When you get through Paris, Olympic gold in your pocket, and the mixed relay gold. So well done, double gold.
Thanks, mate.
You know, and you'll come back on my show, and we'll celebrate together. All right, you promised me that.
Absolutely.
All right, and so, you know, what are you thinking then, going beyond that? I know your whole focus right now is Paris, but is there kind of like a, when you think of the sport as a whole, is there kind of a what you want from it, an idea?
Yeah, as you mentioned, like all those opportunities in the sport in today's, kind of racing sphere and in triathlon is super exciting. I count myself really lucky to be, you know, towards the peak of my career, you know, at such a great time for the sport. I think, you know, there's so many guys that have come and gone, like yourselves in those formative years, and you know, gave so much to the sport and allowed it to develop and change so much. So, yeah, to recognize that history and to be where we are now is really cool. Yeah. I think, it excites me, and I think, you know, a race like 2032 in Brisbane is like a massive like motivator. Like, it's how exciting is that? Like a home Olympics, you know, if I can kick on for another 8 years, you know, I'll feel very old then if I don't feel very old now. But it's in terms of like the sport and the time and the sport. But then it also excites me that, you know, in those 8 years, I'll have an opportunity to maybe dip into, to, you know, a few 70.3 races, yeah, or a few 100K races, and you know, allow myself to discover, you know, new skills in that form of racing would be pretty cool. And hopefully I get the opportunity.
You did the Noosa Tri last year, the first non-drafting, and Hayden Wild only just got you there.
Yeah.
He's done a few of them. Not a bad first entry into the non-drafting world.
Not too bad. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it was because it was Noosa first and foremost, and it awesome. Was my first Noosa triathlon. Such an awesome race. If anyone gets a chance to go there, it's an iconic weekend, and just like just triathlon takes over. Like triathlon literally takes over like a big city, and it's pretty cool. But on that, I probably only spent like 2 weeks post NEOM Super League Grand Final. You know, on the TT bike, and Specialized were so great in giving me the shiv to use that in that race. And I remember feeling, you know, I didn't do a lot of work on it, but I remember feeling like strong, and I was like capable of like doing some good things. And I look back on the footage, and I was like, compared to what I was thinking of how I looked, and then looking at the footage, I'm like, man, yes. I was up at the dinner table, like eating dinner. Like I was literally, compared to Hayden, who's just like.
Isn't it funny though? You feel like, yeah, I'm fully tucked and yeah. I've got my, you know, and then you see a picture of yourself and you're like, oh man, I was really pushing a lot of wind.
It's crazy. It's like listening yeah. to yourself back, you know, it's just like, really? Like, do I sound like that? Or like,
I know.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And like to the fact that Hayden was like dialed in with his canyon and spent, you know, probably hours in the wind tunnel. I'm only assuming, but you know, the professional.
Well, he spent more time on it. Yeah. You know, there's a flexibility and a fitness and, you know, I remember when we were dialing it in, I had my fitness coach my fitting coach and we just would fit me every kind of 2-3 months. We're just squeezing a millimeter, a millimeter, a millimeter. And it took me years. You know, it took me years to get down really to the point where I could be leading races holding under 300 watts. And I was just so aero and so comfortable, right? And it's like, because I just dialed it in for so many years that you had 2 weeks.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that's probably a barrier to entry for me at the moment. I think to fully dial into and to buy into that sort of stuff, it's going to take months and a year or two of preparation and practice, which, you know, I'm looking forward to taking on. But for me, the most fun and kick I get out of the sport is pushing myself and challenging myself in high intense and risky adaptive situations. And I think that's what you know, short course racing provides. And you know, you're not just racing yourself or the clock, you're racing, you know, 20 other guys or, you know, 60 other guys that are just as hungry as you to squeeze through these tight corners and to come across first. So Super Tri is going to be a big part of the next few years for me. I think even just like formative years for me for, you know, gaining race experience and to keep exposing myself to that high level and it creates so much atmosphere and fun, I think, for spectators as well. Like the races are literally over in like 20 minutes. Like it's bite-sized, you know, it's like a hot Cheeto, flaming hot Cheeto. It's like you take a bite, you feel the thrill and, you know, it doesn't take up your whole day. So it's nice.
Hot Cheeto.
Yeah. For your American listeners.
Yeah. So then look, mate, we're chatting here mid-February. This will probably come out start of March, but have you got a calendar set up of races? You're going to get some decent racing in before Paris. What's the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to get some decent racing in, you know, but also I'm going to be selective you know, really pick and choose what I do. And early selection allows me to do that, thankfully. I'm going to race Abu Dhabi early March, kick off my season there, and then come back home to Australia and race Wollongong World Cup, which is a return to World Cup racing for Australia, which is super exciting. And, ahead of the World Championships that's been locked in for next year is also that's a great thing for the sport in Australia. And I think we need more of that. Like we need more racing here on the shores of Australia. You know, we were one of the top countries, you know, back in the day, and one of only like 5 or 6 countries to start out in the sport. So I think we really need to get back to our strengths there, and you know, racing and race exposures the only thing that's going to do that. So it's an exciting time having Wollongong and having a few races come back to Australia, and that'll continue in the 2032. Furthermore to that, I'll race Yokohama as well. I'll race the French Grand Prix in Metz for my team leaving. And then Hamburg, and that's, 2-3 weeks before the game. So
I love that you're racing, buddy. My big fear also always is when athletes get there, they don't race, you know, and you've the big lesson you learned from Tokyo was we didn't get to race. So I love the fact that you've put some big, heavy, big hitting races on your calendar, put yourself in the thick of it. You know, there's nothing better than race fitness. You know,
absolutely.
It's like you can train all you want, but you got to put yourself in the thick of it.
It's the best form of training. It's the best form of training, hands down.
Yeah, especially for a racer. Yeah.
And you can't learn things, you know, in training. Like you have a bad day, you put it down to fatigue or tiredness or whatever. But you really do get exposed on a higher level in racing. There's definitely something to race fitness. I think it's not just obviously the physical fitness that you get, but the preparation, you know, of dialing in those killer instincts is super important.
Even just packing your bag in the hotel to go to the race.
Yeah.
It's like you start to just, oh, yeah, I know rubber bands or whatever. Like you just bang, bang, bang. When you don't race for a while, it's amazing how much shit you forget and you, oh,
for sure.
You know, definitely. All over the place. I love it, mate. Well, I want to finish up with, I ask all my guests these final four questions. First one, look, mate, this is only not long ago for you, but you know, reflecting on your years, is there anything you would tell your 18-year-old self? We could even go back 16-year-old self. Anything you would go back and tell yourself?
I'd probably say, the biggest revelation I've obviously reflected on this, you know, just before, but yeah, just the sport's not going to be around forever. So just give it everything you got. You're not going to be fit and young forever. So that's exciting. And give every opportunity 100% and race like it's your last race. I think that's something that I didn't necessarily do wrong, but it's something that I'd you know, make a vocal point and just to believe in yourself through the whole process is, one of the most powerful things.
That's maturity beyond your years, first and foremost. I've got to say that without sounding condescending. But, you know, the big thing I keep telling people is being comfortable with your own mortality, not definitely just triathlon and fitness, but understanding that, you know, I start every day with my gratitude. And then as I walk into the house, I go, okay, today could be your last. How do you want to live it?
Yeah, right? Exactly. And it's right.
That claiming of perspective of going, okay, you got this moment. What do you want to do?
For sure.
That's really cool, mate. I love that. All right. If you could have dinner with any three people, they can be living or dead, ideally not family, who would it be and why?
This is always a tough question, but it's quite a fascinating question at the same time. I think I would go, I'd go LeBron James just because, He's a class athlete, and his longevity in NBA and the sport of basketball has just been something quite remarkable. And his attitude towards life and sport, while keeping it like fun and entertaining, is also like very locked in and passionate. So I'd say him, and then a bit of a curveball, I'd say Kanye West, just because he's such a fruitful character. And I think he'd just be hilarious and throw some curveballs in there.
Did you see him get booted out of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, well, apparently that wasn't him getting booted out. He said he was going to see some mates in another box or something like that. So just the high-paced life that he lives, I guess. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, nothing short of controversial for that guy, which I think would make me, spit my food out and laugh at the dinner table. So that would be quite cool. And and another musician, I'd say George Harrison, an underrated member of the Beatles. I'm a bit of a 70s rock fan, and you know, obviously they were 60s, 70s, but I think he'd have a lot of stories to tell. You know, obviously not the front man, and I love his solo career and music as well. So, I think he'd be a great kind of leveler to the conversation of the big personalities that are Kanye and LeBron. So there you go.
That's a great three, mate. I love it. It's like a blast from the past. You know, George Harrison, I mean, you and I, we could just go sit and listen to albums together, mate. I'm a huge fan, that whole era of music, but you know, obviously it's hard to leave out the Beatles in any form. Kanye West, love his character, not sure I can handle his music as much as you could.
Fair enough.
LeBron, that's really cool, mate. I love it.
Thanks, mate.
All right, looking ahead, 5 years time, we've gone through two Olympics now. We'd have Paris and LA behind us. Where do you see yourself 5 years?
I see myself just still waking up every day and loving what I'm doing, loving the sport, maybe having a family on my own. I don't know. We'll see where we go with that. Still ticking off triathlon goals, but also life goals and kind of.
Love it.
Great answer. Right. Yeah.
You'll still be young, mate. I didn't make my first Olympics until I was 32.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, the golden 30s are still in front of you. There's still great stuff coming. And I know it seems like, you know, 5-8 years seems like a long way. I'll be here before you know it. But all right, mate, if you had 6 months to live, how would you choose to spend your time? And that's not a morbid question because you understand time. You've been talking about it.
Definitely.
But how would you choose your time?
I think I'd just I just invest and spend time in the people that invest in me, and reward them and give back to them, and travel and experience things with them and my family. So yeah, I think that's probably it. You know, 6 months isn't long, so you can't really touch everyone in the world, touch everyone's hearts or emotions or you know, be kind. So I think, yeah, investing into my circle and giving back to them, I think would be mine.
Love it, mate. Mate, you're a very inspirational young man already.
These are hard hitting questions. So
I'm double your age, and I'm like, wow, I don't think I was anywhere near as wise as you are at 26, mate. And I'm very impressed. You've been raised well.
I think that's I think that comes down to like hanging out with older guys as well. Like I think seeing success in the sport at a young age, I've always hung out with, you know, guys like Ryan Fisher. You know, he's a great mate of mine now, and you know, Aaron Royal, and you know, those guys coming up from the sport, guys that I used to look up with, and you know, raced towards the end of their careers in short course try. So, I don't know. I think I've always been like hanging around older guys, which has been kind of cool for sure.
That's really cool. Hey, mate, do you want to finish with just some rapid fire questions? You're one of the fastest guys in the world of triathlon, so I think you should be pretty good at this.
Okay.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Favorite cheap meal?
KFC.
hardest workout you've ever done?
Probably like a brick session. I'd probably say like hills into time trial work on the bike, and then like 6 to 8 1Ks.
Ugly. Yeah. Best place in the world that you've trained?
I'll say Spain. Yeah, Spain.
Spain? Better than the Goldie? Better than Noosa?
Better than Goldie. I think the drivers are a little bit more, you know, it speaks for itself. Yeah.
All right. If you could be the best in any sport in the world, like you're number one, you're like Messi in soccer, what sport would it be?
It'd be a toss-up between AFL and NBA. I think those are the two most entertaining sports for me. NBA just being like a whole roller coaster, I think. So and obviously the money doesn't really go astray there either. So yeah, it'd be pretty good.
Did I see you on your Instagram taking photos with all the AFL players somewhere? Did you go to a game recently? Was that part of the Olympic team or something?
It was an opportunity I was given by the Gold Coast Suns, a local team here on the Gold Coast. And basically the high performance manager was a really keen triathlete and invited me in, and the boys were really welcoming. So that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love it, mate. All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Double shots. Mountains or beach?
Double shots or piss off, I think is the term.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Is the coffee culture still big where people are traveling with their own little things?
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. It's a bit snobby, but you know. Who doesn't enjoy a nice coffee? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Mountains or beach?
Beach.
One book you'd recommend to a friend?
I haven't read many books. I'm kind of a bit of a biography man. I think I read Robert Plant's book, the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, and that was pretty cool. So, yeah.
Awesome. I'm a bit like you. I enjoy the autobiographies. I just finished Agassi's book.
Open. Nice. Awesome.
It was pretty good.
Dad loved that book.
He was very open. Yeah. It was pretty cool.
For sure.
All right. Greatest movie of all time.
I'll say the greatest sporting movie of all time for me, Field of Dreams. That was a really powerful movie.
Yeah. Love it. One habit you wish you could break.
Probably like questioning myself too much. I'd say just be more sure of myself, and you know, if you do anything with confidence, you're on the right track.
Very normal, mate. Very normal, by the way.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
The best decade of music?
70s.
Yeah. I don't know if you have. Well, you've already said this one. Let me go to the next one. If you could set one world record, what would it be in anything?
Maybe marathon, because that's just, yeah. I think everyone's jumping on the running craze now for sure. And marathon is, I mean, yeah, rip to Kip Dumm. Like, that's such a tragedy. Oh, so, yes.
Brutal. Well, guys, this whole point of this whole episode we've recorded, we've talked about time a lot.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Valuing what's in front of you.
Goes out a champion, though. Goes out a champion.
100%. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Mate. Well, Matt, this has been a real pleasure, buddy. You know, our path has only crossed, I think, once before.
Yeah, in Edmonton, 2017, maybe.
17. Yep. I was looking to do some work with Triathlon Australia. That never eventuated, but I remember being at that race. And we had dinner afterwards, I think it was.
Or whatever.
And I just remember just thinking, you're a good young man with the future ahead of you. God, that was 7 years ago. You
know? It's crazy.
And it's just been a real pleasure to watch you perform and race, and now to have you on the show at 6 a.m. You got up early to chat with me, and you've still got a big training day ahead of you, mate, buddy. But this has been a really fantastic episode. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Gregor. Yeah, obviously a pleasure, and can't wait to the next time.
Yeah, for sure, mate. After that gold medal, right?
I'm absolutely. Absolutely. You have to edit out the noise of them clinking.
Yeah.
I shouldn't stop the talk. Come on.
No. That's fine. You were doing that in jest, and that was fun.
Of course.
Mate, well, yeah, it was a real pleasure. And everybody listening, you can find all the show notes, timestamps, and everything else at bennettendurance.com/media. All right, stay on the line, Matt. Cheers.